This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
My friends, there is a huge pile of stinking badness coming from the nuclear mafia in the United States. It just keeps going on and on. Two states are begging for tons of the worst radiation on Earth, deadly plutonium. And a small village in Alaska is the testing ground, the guinea pigs, for a new push of mini-reactors. Those are the ones the big corporations want you to swallow, now that their so-called renaissance of giant reactors has failed. Imagine you know and love your state or your province and region deeply. You adventure through the highlands, gaze over the rivers that seem almost sacred in their beauty. You imagine that timeless gift passing down through the generations. So how do you feel when you know your government teams up with some mega corporation to experiment with radioactive materials, the ones that remain dangerous for hundreds of thousands of years, when they truck bomb-grade plutonium along your freeways and neighborhoods? On December 1st, 2012, the Nuclear Information and Resource Service at NIRS.org held their Mountain of Waste 70 Years High conference in Chicago, USA. You can watch the YouTube videos from the conference at their website at NIRS.org or find that link in my Radio EcoShock blog at ecoshock.info. I got this audio courtesy of Dale Lehman at WZRD Chicago, the free-form radio station operating from Northeastern Illinois University in Chicago. First, I'm going to play you the introductions to the guests for this panel at the conference, in case you want to download the audio or watch the video. Then we'll get to the fireworks.
I'd like to ask Paul Gunter to speak first. He has more than 35 years' experience as an anti-nuclear activist and safe energy advocate. He's the director of the Reactor Oversight Project for Beyond Nuclear in Tacoma Park, Maryland. He was co-founder of the New England-based Clamshell Alliance, which in 1976 opposed the construction of the Seabrook nuclear power plant in New Hampshire, something many of us with gray hair remember very well. Bob Alvarez is a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., and a senior advisor at Friends of the Earth. He has served as the senior policy advisor to the U.S. Secretary of Energy, where, among other things, he led teams into North Korea to secure spent nuclear reactor fuel at the Yongbyon nuclear site. From 1988 to 1993, Bob served on the majority staff of the U.S. Senate Committee on Governmental Affairs, where, among other things, he helped establish independent safety oversight of the DOE nuclear weapons complex. And then we'll turn to Kendra Ulrich, who is a nuclear campaigner for Friends of the Earth. She's served as the New Hampshire Coordinator for Safe and Green Campaign and on the Coordinating Committee for the Regional SAGE Alliance, working to shut down the Vermont Yankee nuclear reactor, which hasn't quite happened, but boy, came close. While in graduate school, she also served as the Freeze Our Fukushima's Outreach Coordinator for Beyond Nuclear.
Even these first-rate panelists were no match for the residents and activists that are hopping mad about horrible machinations to irradiate and endanger their home grounds from South Carolina through the Southwest all the way to Alaska. I'm going straight to the question and answer period to give you a taste of what's going on out there. Just listen to the pain and betrayal in South Carolina.
It's the MOX program. I believe some of the Rocky Flats plutonium ended up in my state of South Carolina at the under-construction MOX facility, which is another, I think, crossing gray area between commercial and weapons, because they're trying to build this plant to burn this MOX fuel to go where we don't know. And I'm just curious if y'all have any comments about that. And the other thing that I haven't seen on the agenda here is this idea of bringing all the spent fuel to a DOE site, which my state is in the crosshairs of dumping this 70,000 tons plus whatever else is being created at a central location, which when I saw the graph with the Savannah River site and all the radiation, I'm like, well, that just puts it over the top there, doesn't it? So I wondered if they would speak about either one of those or both.
Yeah, thanks. Bob, do you want to talk about MOX?
Well, yeah, sure. The mixed oxide program is essentially a program to try to mix plutonium from nuclear weapons with uranium to fuel commercial nuclear power plants. It's estimated to cost, at least in terms of construction, about $5 billion. And if you look at the MNO management operating costs or life cycle costs, it's probably going to be 4 to 5 times more than that. the timing of this facility is such as by the time that any large quantity of MOX material will be available for nuclear power plants, assuming they can overcome certain safety problems, which are not minor, a lot of these power plants will be closed. The thing about MOX is that it makes the spent fuel much, much more radioactive, and you can't recycle this stuff despite what the French say. They only do it once through. Once you start to use large amounts of plutonium or any significant amount of plutonium in a commercial reactor, you're not burning up that much. You're burning up about 20% of it, and the rest of it remains. But what happens is that it renders the spent fuel fantastically more radioactive and gives off a greater amount of what they call decay heat. And the decay heat is so great that in some instances, this stuff will have to cool off for 150 years before you can even think about putting it into a geologic repository.
Thanks. Did you want to talk about DOE repository sites?
Well, there's only one. It's the Waste Isolation Pilot Project, right. And that this is currently receiving and disposing of transuranic waste. Although I think it's going to be a candidate for disposal of military high-level radioactive waste in the future.
Good, thanks. I am, in the interest of time, going to ask the man in the blue shirt be the last person to ask questions, so no more new people in the line. And
my friends let me.
Well,
my friends let me up.
Okay.
My friends let me up.
All right.
Because I'm on the same vein as Susan, and we need to finish this. So, Bob, I should have said hello this morning. I'm sure you would have covered MOX more thoroughly instead of glossing over it. So this is what we're living with in South Carolina and Georgia. And we're spending $500 million a year. All the plutonium is coming back to Savannah River site on the Savannah River. And we have no customers for this boondoggle. I mean, there's plenty of reasons to be opposed to this MOX plutonium fuel, but we have no customers. TVA is a federal, quasi-federal agency, and they got forced into the tritium program, and I think that's DOE's plan now is to force them to take MOX. But even if that happened, they're facing 10 years of licensing and testing, and they've got like a 40-year-old Fukushima-style reactor and an nearly that old ice condenser, dismal reactor. So I just want everybody to know this, and that there's a really campaign that's growing legs with the budget.
Yes.
People are figuring out this is the factory to nowhere.
Thanks.
So you may want to comment on that,
yeah.
But my other little piece is to add on to what Susan said. She did not mention that the state of South Carolina has asked for all the spent fuel to come. I mean, this is a work in progress that Savannah River site in South Carolina are saying, yucca failed, bring it here. So y'all, South Carolina is poised to be the new yucca, and we desperately hope and believe that the same national energy will prevent that from happening. And what Bob pointed out is coming down the pike. We got to redo our nuclear program.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're really pleased to hear about that, and thank you for sharing all the details.
So the state of South Carolina is begging for the whole country's nuclear waste to come there now that Yucca Mountain has failed? That is such treason for Carolinians. We have to ask ourselves, why are governments so suicidal, even terroristic, to their own people? Only big lobby money and the hope of endless government subsidies could explain it. The same dangerous plutonium game is going on in New Mexico. Listen to this.
Actually, my name is Robert Chavez, a member of Think Outside the Bomb and Honor Our Public Existence. I actually don't have a question as much as I do have a comment. One of the comments I wanted to make was on the MOX fuel. It involves my community, Los Alamos. They want to do is they want to bring 13 metric tons of the plutonium, and they want to convert it into this MOX fuel via the Ares process. So they want to take a plutonium pit and basically chop it in half, and through the Ares project, turn it into plutonium oxide and mix it with uranium oxide to create these eraser-sized pellets of fuel. And, you know, I really don't want that to happen. And the second point I wanted to make was on the waste isolation plant. It's the only geological repository in the Department of Energy. And by law, it's limited to 175,000 cubic feet of transuranic waste. And the waste that you're talking about, the energy waste, is only 2 metric tons of activated metals. And that is 160 million curies of radiation. The 175,000 pounds limited by law is only 3 million curies of radiation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just to get an idea of the problem that we're facing.
What about nukes on the Great Lakes?
Barbara Wimsatt. One question I have is about the Great Lakes, which is 20% of the world's fresh water and is ringed by nuclear power plants. I think that's a disturbing situation, and I'm also wondering what effect it's having on the water.
I think it's important to understand, first of all, that given that nuclear power is a lot like cutting butter with a chainsaw, that is that you've got only 33% of the energy generated in the fission process actually going to turbines. The rest of, you know, the principle is waste heat. And so every nuclear power plant requires tremendous amounts of water. The Oyster Creek nuclear power plant in on Barnegat Bay in New Jersey takes in on the order of 1.5 billion gallons of water a day. It basically recycles Barnegat Bay through its cooling system, thousands of times every year. And with those tremendous intake, that tremendous discharge of thermal pollution, there is always the fact that the piping systems in these nuclear power plants are deteriorating, and with that deterioration, we see accelerated leakage. And then there's also the deliberate venting. So you have this, basically sieves that are being created for all the isotopes that are generated and leaking out of the fuel and eventually getting into the water. There is, the only way to address that is to shut these things down. That is the principle and quick route to go.
And don't forget, we learned at this conference that these dirty projects, and especially the waste reprocessing and all that junk, the dirty reactors, it goes to those areas where people are the poorest, often in the South and often people of color.
And with that, I also want to say that, you know, it's not just young people that are missing in this room, but one of the things I was going to talk about, I kind of ran out of time, is the fact that primarily where these new reactors are being sited, and I actually went through the U.S. Census demographics for each of these communities and took a look at who's in those communities, and it's primarily communities of color with excessively high poverty rates where we've chosen to site these places where we already have reactors, yes, but specifically sited in poor communities of color. That's a big issue. And when I look around that room, I don't see those faces here. And so that's another outreach issue where we need to be building meaningful relationships and framing our issues in a way not only that communicates to, say, younger people, but actually building partnerships with impacted reactor communities that aren't represented in this movement yet.
We might as well poison the whole Yukon River basin with nuclear waste, too. Why leave the Arctic without a whack of radioactivity? Thank you, Toshiba Corporation.
Make it very short. My name's Nikos Pastos. I'm from Alaska. I'm an American Indian. We're here with an all-volunteer group. We're a coalition from Alaska Intertribal Council, Alaska's Big Village Network. I work with Center for Water Advocacy. We're collaborating with Haifa Films. They're based here in Chicago. We're making a documentary. If anybody would like to meet with us today at the reception and put some kind of testimony on film. I work on the front end and the very back end of the nuclear fuel cycle, and we work on the human right to water and water quantity issues. So we, in our legal work, in our advocacy work, we try to curtail governments from permitting the unjust use of water. My questions are, and these are questions and comments at the same time, does anybody here, are you aware that Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska is one of the main sources of funding for the nuclear power plants? We have a small population in Alaska, okay, but we have no funding to work. Many people, actually communities are concerned, but there's no organization watchdogging, where a lot of the impetus for funding or externalizing all of this unjust waste. Okay, but Alaska is important for many, many reasons. We work with over 230 tribal communities throughout Alaska. It's significant to the food security of the world as well as our national security. And I think the security of human beings, the dignity of human beings. Right now, the Norwegians are pushing a large liquefied natural gas container. They're made in Korea. They're using nuclear icebreakers from Russian nuclear icebreakers. The other thing is that we're looking at vessel traffic coming from the tar sands, which is very radioactive. If we have one large spill of the tar sands, or we have another, there's been many nuclear disasters in the Arctic, which you may or may not know about. Also, we have a lot of uranium, rare earth elements, other energy minerals in Alaska. But if we have one of those containers spill, or we have one nuclear ice-breaking accident in the Arctic, we're going to lose a lot of the world's protein source. And so I'm suggesting and asking the panel, I was very happy that, Kendra, you brought up environmental justice. Tribal communities, federally recognized tribes within the United States framework, have special, there's special duties that the federal agencies have to give, government-to-government consultation, accountability. Okay, has anybody considered working with frontline communities and governments, polities that we have existing, traditional structures that we've had for thousands of years? We need national and international organizing. We don't have any money for this. But a lot of the problems and a lot of the dangers are being borne by frontline communities in Alaska. Thank you for the time.
Thank you very much.
Well, I'll address the specifically the Alaska water issue. I think that it's important for us all to know that right now, you know, the large reactor renaissance, as it's called, or the relapse, as it really is, it's failed. But the move is afoot now for what they call small modular reactors, so that they're going to look to revive their future in new reactors by building these little ones. And the fight against those little ones really begins in Alaska, interestingly enough, where there's a town there called Galena. Galena's 800 people. And Toshiba is very interested and has been in talks with the mayor of Galena to build a what they call the 4S Toshiba, but it's a liquid sodium reactor that they propose to bury under the permafrost, 100 feet under the permafrost on the Yukon River floodplain. So the last of the pristine rivers in the world, there have been negotiations and machinations to put a liquid sodium reactor under the permafrost on the floodplain there in the middle of Alaska. And the entire Yukon River Intertribal Council has mobilized. This is their livelihood. This is their salmon fishing. This is their water source. And that has been a battle that is being won right now. And it is the principal first battle in this emerging battle against small modular reactors. So our hats are off. We've worked with the Yukon River Intertribal Council, and their work is exemplary for the small modular reactor fight that's coming in many places.
In case you forget, in this short clip from the NEIS conference in Chicago, Arne Gunderson of Fairwinds.com tells us tens of millions of people in Tokyo, Japan, are still irradiated every day from the Fukushima reactor accident there in 2011.
The authorities, whether IAEA or the Japanese government, have consistently underestimated the radiation. I was in Tokyo in February. I was on the book tour, and I brought plastic bags with me. And every day I would walk outside and grab some dirt from where I was, and I ran those. I came back with the dirt, brought them through customs officially. You know, you have to declare dirt when you bring it back, and then sent it to a lab. And all five bags would qualify as radioactive waste here in the country. And this was on the streets of Tokyo. So, you know, what we would have to ship to Texas and store by our standards in Tokyo was ubiquitous. I was there again in August, and I was over on Niigata, which is on the opposite coast on the Sea of Japan. And it didn't get nailed by the plume so much, but the mountains between Fukushima Prefecture and Niigata are contaminated. And now their sediment in their rivers is loaded with radiation as well. In addition to the exposure people are picking up with their handheld inspectors and, you know, the devices or Geiger counters that people have, there's also a lot of hot particle contamination where people have ingested the material. We have cases where we have house dust that we're getting. People are sending us vacuum cleaner bags of dust. And one of the bags, which was examined over in England, it was 100,000 disintegrations per second in a two-pound bag of dust. And that goes on, of course, for centuries. So the Japanese sleep on the floor. So the dust that's on the floor is in their lungs. And I am at the... Based on my experience at Three Mile Island, I think over the next 30 or 40 years, we could see a million cancers as a result. I understand that that's an extreme view. But when you look at Steve Wing's work at TMI, and I extrapolate linearly with that, I think we're going to see a lot of cancers. Right now, we see an enormous... In Fukushima Prefecture, 40% of the kids tested have thyroid nodules. The normal number is 1%. The thyroid nodules are a precursor for cancer. So we're at the beginning of that experience, and it's alienating women especially and causing Fukushima divorces. I could go on about this. We'll talk out in the hall.
That radiation will be in Japan for thousands of years, affecting the health of humans and all species for generation after generation. That's why we don't want any more nuclear power in America and Canada, Britain, Europe, China, Russia, India, or anywhere else. One panelist at the Chicago conference suggested we have a good solution for nuclear waste, but no political will. Again, a person attending called out that statement. Well, what is this good solution? Name one. She couldn't. Arnie Gunderson of Fairwinds, he's a realist. He says while we do have to deal with what we've got, and at the very least, get all those fuel rods out of the storage ponds right next to the reactors. If the power goes out on those cooling ponds, they can explode, as happened at reactors 3 and 4 at Fukushima, Japan. The spent fuel rod should be put into concrete casks as a much safer temporary solution on a priority basis. Get to it. But the first thing to do, Arnie tells us, is simple. If you are in a hole, stop digging. And this comes from a past nuclear executive in the field, Arnie. He says there are no safe solutions for the waste problem, so we need to shut them down, instead of continuing on the suicidal path of creating still more radioactive waste. My special thanks to the Nuclear Information and Resource Service at NIRS.org and Dale Lehman at WZRD Chicago for this heads up on nuclear waste developments in the States. Find more links at NIRS's website or in my blog at ecoshock.info for both the audio and video of the whole conference. It was held in Chicago December 1st and 2nd, and it was titled Mountain of Waste, 70 Years High, Ending the Nuclear Age. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.